Podcasting from Alexandria, Virginia, just a few miles outside of Washington, D.C., this is the Software Quality Today podcast presented by TX3 Services, where we empower life sciences companies to digitally transform their software testing. This is a podcast about the trends and challenges of software testing, computerized system validation, and the people who are leading the way. We'll be providing you with interviews from industry thought leaders from leading life sciences organizations and vendors alike. Today's guest, Ajay Pandey, has agreed to be interviewed as an individual subject matter expert, and the views and opinions he shares are his own and not necessarily shared by his employer, Biogen. Nor should any reference to specific tools, products, or services be interpreted as commercial endorsements by Biogen. And now, here's your host, Dory Gonzalez-Azevedo.
Welcome to another episode of Software Quality Today, presented by TX3 Services. I'm your host, Dory Gonzalez-Azevedo. Today, I'll be interviewing my friend and colleague, Ajay Pandey. Ajay is currently the Senior Manager of ALM Platform at Biogen. He has over 20 years' experience in application lifecycle management tools implementations within life sciences. Earlier this year, Ajay and I co-presented at Vivid, an independent micro-focused software user community webinar on the benefits of risk-based testing. We wanted to continue that conversation here on the podcast. Ajay has been instrumental in implementing several large testing centers of excellence within organizations. And today at Biogen, he continues to lead the way, bridging the quality and IT groups together to continuously improve their digital validation roadmap. Without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Ajay. Welcome to another episode of Software Quality Today. I'm your host, Dory Gonzalez-Acevedo, and I have the pleasure today of interviewing friend and colleague Ajay Pandey from Biogen. Ajay and I have known each other for several years now and have pleasure of working together, and I thought it would be a great introduction for you, Ajay, to our audience, to share some of the great things that you've been working on over the years and your experience with them all.
Sure, Dory, and pleasure to talk to you on this platform here. Hello, everyone. My name is Ajay Pandey, and I have known Dory for a long, long, long time now, professionally, with different engagements with my current employer and previous employer, and she is a wealth of knowledge. And every time we engage for some project, there's tons to be learned from her. So my background is in software quality and project management. And going back 20 years when I was a fresh graduate coming to US for my master's in information systems. And after that, various consulting assignments, and then my arrival into the world of life science. And from what I have learned in last 10 to 12 years in life science is patience. You got to be very patient. Things moves at a totally different pace as compared to our non-GXP or non-life science environment. So that was a huge adjustment for me to do. It's been a great ride. I enjoy life science. I like the challenges posed to technology within the realm of our GXP regulations. And they change by country to country, globally and within the org, site to site. So these challenges has made me what I am today, where I am today. And of course, the opportunity to interact many of the industry professionals, including Dory, here. And this is, for me, it's a continuous journey.
So Ajay, so tell us a little bit about what you're doing today and your role at Biogen and what you guys are building over there in your testing center of excellence.
Sure. So I report into testing center of excellence. We are responsible for testing services for all our system owners, whether they are COT system or built in-house. And as usual, we are divided into two houses, GXP and non-GXP. We use ALM as our test management and requirements management tool. And TX3 Vera is our tool of choice to bring in the controls we need in a system of record. Before my arrival, we were primarily using it as a test management tool only. So we were housing our test plan and test runs and defects in there. And now we are moving our requirements management along with risk management within ALM with Vera Workflow.
How large is your team, Ajay?
So I have a lead admin, and then within that, it's supported by 5 to 6 analysts, and then I have another team for validation activity to keep the system validated. So that varies as we go through our release cadence for our platform.
And then how large is the community that you serve? How many applications under test do you guys currently have? Oh. Just want to get a sense of volume here that we're talking about.
Right. So I think we are north of 450 plus projects now within ALM. We have served around 1,500 to 2,000 last count, because we do periodic reviews on our own system. And, based on we have to offboard a lot of users out of the system. For last count, I think we were around 1,500 users worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're talking about, and this is over the course of a couple of years. How fast to grow to the size? Because you've increased significantly in the last couple of years, correct?
Correct. And it has increased, and it will increase. It will actually double as we onboard the requirement management with risk assessment within Vera. At that time, we have a guiding procedure for our lifecycle management. And I think I will see a shift from paper to electronic in coming days, because what last year has taught us is your geolocation does not matter, as long as you can connect and perform your day-to-day task. And I think it is very critical for us as a global company to get on that path as soon as possible, plus maintaining adherence to our global procedure for lifecycle management.
So part of this journey for you has been getting teams acclimated to doing getting off paper, right? So
correct.
There's still a large community at Biogen that wants and uses paper to
sure.
do testing for a variety of reasons. And so part of your enablement has been in embracing that and trying to make that transition for them. Any thoughts or tips for folks that have had challenges in wanting to give up the paper?
Yes. So you have to, it's a partnership. It's not just a technical solution or a team's job to implement it. It impacts a lot of people. So of course, your friends from IT quality or computer system validation, you have to take them into account early in the process. You have to earn their confidence. And then you will progress, because ultimately they are your customers, right? You have to have I'm lucky to have a support of a very good customer experience team, which assist in onboarding artifacts. I think that is communication. Communication is needs to be very clear, and it has to be piecemeal. Many of us want to do big bang, but I think baby steps. Approaching a system piece by piece, delivering it piece by piece, because we have to do over. We have a day job too, right?
Right.
We can't
yep.
just stop that and change everything overnight. So I thought that approach works in larger organization, and once things start falling in place, it takes that snowball effect, and it takes its own course, and you just have to watch it and provide the support it's needed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I guess I've heard different stories from different folks, right? The Big Bang, everyone wants to capitalize on their investment, right? And wanting to try to get there as soon as, well, get there, whatever that means, right? As utilizing the applications that they purchase to their full extent as quick as possible to capitalize on that, right? And at the same time, what you're saying is on the back end, there's all the people and the process and all the incremental steps that have to get there. And that's no small feat. And so one of the things that you and I talk about a lot and we strategize around is risk-based testing, risk-based requirements. Like, what does this mean, right? And one way to try to really limit what's being focused on in terms of testing, because you can't test everything, right?
Correct,
and
correct.
So can you share a little bit about your journey there?
Yes. I was very familiar with the paper-based, like any other org, any other technology lead. When Dory and the TX3 team presented their vision of how this can be achieved within the Vera, the eye just popped up. Why it is important. So we see a direct benefit, right? So again, depend on the organizations to organizations. Some teams are very siloed. Some teams are very cohesive. Depend on what you're dealing with, the visibility into requirements, visibility into risk as soon as it is assessed, requirement is assessed. And then visibility to downstream team is a huge benefit for having a good mature SDLC. It's that plain and simple, right? Depend on how your own organization or how mature your organization's SDLC is. Many times it is a very siloed approach, and that leads to delays in delivery time. That leads to delays in or what we say rework. Basically, it increases the rework. So this can be avoided if we have a digital platform where we can onboard these artifacts and make it available to everyone. We all know, how many of these tools works, and there are many in the marketplace. But we have worked long and hard to customize these solutions for our needs, right? To customize it per industry best practices. And that's what Vera Workflow gives you out of the box, right? And that was the biggest advantage we had. And now in my organization currently, we are onboarding our requirements with risk assessment. We are going through the validation process. It's a huge, huge benefit to my counterparts on the quality side, right? We are cutting down papers. We are cutting down an additional document, and basically, we are now giving our testing teams a clear indication what needs to be tested and what is not necessary. Basically, right? Mm-hmm. Because in the past, like any other org, to mitigate our risk, we tested everything, but right. It takes its toll. It takes time. It right. takes additional resources, delay things, so to avoid all that, we have a much more cleaner, mechanism basically in our platform to assess risk on these requirements and proceed.
Yeah. So Vera's given you the opportunity to be able to very transparently lay out the requirements, show the risk, decide what the mitigation strategies are for those requirements, and then choosing a test, which one of those are you going to bubble up to do testing for and what types of testing.
Correct.
And so that process in, going through and assessing risk, what do you think are some of the challenges there? Because that's still, the tool is only going to do as much as give you the ability to categorize things and put things in a workflow, but there's also human intervention here, right, to get those requirements assessed. So right. What are some of your thoughts there?
So just having a smart tool does not, you know, solve all the problems, or an efficient tool does not solve the problem. But basically, as you said, you know, the human intervention is important. How mature is your organization requirement management process, right? We all, either buy products or built products and make configurational changes to that. How do you document that, right? Who are your implementation partner? When you onboard them, what you dictate them and not dictate them, right? How do you maintain once the system is handed over to you? So all this goes into a good, good product delivery for your customers. So requirement management is no different. This body of knowledge basically sometimes take a backseat, and then you see the end results. So in my opinion, I think, and my recommendation to my counterpart in the industry is that please pay attention to your requirement management, because if it is done well, you will reap the benefit downstream. Your testing will be much more effective. Your maintenance and releases, change management will be much more effective going forward to that. So pay attention to that. Build a detailed requirement tree, as per your organization policies or procedures, whatever your lifecycle management guidelines are. Make sure you plan for it and you do it. Yeah, don't take a shortcut in requirements management.
So one of the things you and I did when we did this last deployment together, which not everyone does, and so that's why I want to raise it, is you very much wanted our help and support in assessing your risks for your system, right? Correct. So you guys went through a pass and said, this is what we think it is, right? And then you came to us as your technical implementation partner and said, is this, you know, are these right? You know, like, is this really high risk, or where is the, you know what I mean? And I wonder how often that collaboration happens. So it's one thing to collaborate with your quality people and what they think, but you actively, proactively reach out to your implementation partner like TX3 and say, can we partner in this and do that? So do you see that happen often, or is this really kind of...
So unfortunately not, right? And that's where the disconnect happens, right? So you have certain requirements from your quality, and you want to bake it into technology, but somewhere that it gets lost in translation from your requirement from quality to you as a technology platform owner to your implementation partner. So if you bring all the three stakeholders together early in the process, it helps tremendously, because then you have the quick feedback loop: what is possible, what is not possible, what can be delivered, what timeline, things like that, you know. And your quality partners, people who need to use the system, will tell you right off the bat that it's working or it's not working. Yes, there will be resistance. You need to be very, very honest with them what is possible through technology and where you need to change your current way of doing things. Because many times what we do is we try to tweak the system as per your processes, and somebody has to face the mirror and say, no, these processes are not the best. We have to make some amendments to it. So mm-hmm. that conversation, if happens early during the implementation, I think will help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think is some of the most critical parts of your testing objectives today, like for your team and for where you guys are going?
So first, how much to test, right? Because mm-hmm. again, we see sometimes challenges with the system when we are contracted for an engagement that our budget and our time is already being decided, mm-hmm. right? And we have to work within that to deliver what we need to deliver, right? And I think in other orgs too, this may be happening. But the biggest challenge is how to effectively test. The systems are smart. The technology on which they are built is smarter. A lot of cloud-based technology. My early years in the software quality, you know, we used to just open the page or the application and you will find the bug on the login page. Those days are gone. Mm-hmm. Now the software quality folks need to be at par in their understanding of the system as business analysts or system owners. Unless you understand the design of the system, you will never find bugs in it, right? So that is that is huge. Then depend on your model, what kind of model you have. Do you have in-house resources, FTE resources, or you're hiring, you know, in you are in an MSP model, or you're hiring resources to that. That domain knowledge, that the knowledge your organization has gone through to build a system you're replacing or a system you're maintaining, basically, right? That domain knowledge is very, very critical in delivering a quality tested system for your customers. So these are some challenges.
I think what one of the things that you're raising is very interesting, especially given the ways in which things are being deployed today. So back to your point around whether it's a SaaS system or it's an on-prem system or it's a third-party managed system, right? Correct. All three of those are different categories that we didn't have 10 years ago, right? And what you do with those are different, right?
And I'll give you an example, it's a very specific example. So when we were looking at Vera solution and then the VNV model was present to us by TX3, we clearly know what is in our scope in terms of testing and what is will come as a package from the validation package, which will come from TX3. And when we found the audited you guys, you know, TX3, you know, at that time also, your SDLC capabilities are very, very mature, right? Mm-hmm. So we can consume the artifacts which come straight from you. That may not be the case with all your vendors, right? So first you have to make those kind of the rigor you have to build into your processes. If they are solid, the outcome will be good, right? Mm-hmm. So in our case, I think that model worked and we are doing that, as you said, either whether it's an on-prem system, are you doing everything from an installation qualification perspective or, you know, SIT, you know, you're doing that in-house or you are relying on your vendor. That is become very, very common now. And it will change the way traditionally we have done things in the industry, right? Because now you're relying on, even for documentation, you're relying on your external partner. And their processes, their quality management should be as good as what you do in-house.
Yeah, that's, you know, that vendor audit that gets done and just we're audited all the time, right? And that is critical. And sometimes I get nervous when folks don't ask for an audit because I'm like, how mature are they as an organization if they're not asking for an audit from a SaaS provider, right? That kind of just is like, what's going on there, right? Although, you know, getting out of an audit is wonderful. but it is a different dynamic and a different thing. And I think that there's some big players on the block that like your Salesforce and your ServiceNow that and Veeva, right? All of those only provide a SaaS solution, right? And so that standard, that set bar is quite high, right? And so then what do you do with the spectrum of everything else in between? And so how do you figure out where you fit in as an application within that portfolio that you're managing? There's challenges then also with the SaaS model, right? Like, so you have your quarterly releases from all of those providers that you have to do regression testing. And if you don't get it automated in a quick way, right? What are you up against? And keeping up with that, I know you have some very large SaaS applications as well as on-prem applications. And so how do you keep up with maintenance, and is there a different team that does that, or how are you guys setting up for test automation?
So we were like any other org. We had a large test bed of manual test cases for all of our, you know, large system, and then we took the journey of automation. But you know, it doesn't end there because what people forget that, you know, the automation test scripts you have developed or the test bed you have prepared needs constant upkeep, right? That has to be factored in. It's not one time, delivery or one time, creation of these test cases. You have, as the application change, you need to maintain that. And sometimes system owners forget that. They don't budget for it. And, you know, we have different models through which we can support it, but we cannot support all the systems like that, right? Mm-hmm. To have a good automated test bed, you need to have a good automated, good functional, manual functional testing, right? If you have identified the use case. And again, that goes back to risk. What needs to be tested? If it is the most common use case which get impacted every time a change occurs, that needs to be automated first. There should be some math behind each system, which determines, you know, which use cases need to go first for automation. And then you build from there, right?
It's very interesting you're saying that. So how, because I agree a lot of what and the methodology in which you deploy, how do you think that ties into though the new or the continuous, the CI/CD model where I'm hearing more and more of just automate first, right? Correct. And my concerns around that, right, are they doing a real risk-based approach to that? Correct. Or are they just writing a bunch of requirements and not thinking about what needs to be automated? And I have a lot of concern about that. What do you think?
No. And I share with you that too, because just because something is running without a human intervention, it's producing good result. That's the fundamental question out there. Is it really finding issues early in the, you know, I can write a test which will always pass, right? Right. You know, and we have all seen those scenarios as well. What we need to do is that CI/CD kind of environments are great if you're a product company. Mm-hmm. Right, your bread and butter is selling software, or you're building something like that. But in a service oriented org, I don't know how much useful it could be. It could definitely increase your release cadence, but you cannot match up with you know a pure product company where you're committing you know frequently to the code base. You know, and daily basis. So for me, if you want to perform an efficient testing, I would recommend go back to the requirements. What is important? And that's where the clear guidance and the clear, you know, way to do that is look at the risk, right? What is important to business? Did business provided a feedback on that particular requirement? How detailed you write the requirement? Right. Mm-hmm. Are your requirements conflicting each other? Right. What's mm-hmm. the point automating everything? Right. Mm-hmm. So these kind of priorities you need to assess before you even get to automate things. There's no, you will right. never achieve 100% automation. You know, that is a pipe dream in my opinion, because application change. You know, application get replaced, you know, people change that. And these are some of the huge factors why that is not feasible in many orgs. In many orgs, that may be the norm, but in a majority of them, that may not happen.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's, I heard a story the other day about a team running daily automation scripts just to make sure that the SaaS provider was up and running because the SaaS provider is not a compliant cloud solution. So correct. Their solution to mitigate that risk was just to run daily scripts. Yeah.
I'm with you. Is it necessary, right?
It doesn't assure me that that cloud provider is doing the right thing about the backups. It doesn't correct. Provide me the SaaS provider is doing anything under change control at all. It correct. Just gives me a day shot that system is up and running. It doesn't assure me any validation sense in what you and I know to be as a compliant cloud solution. Correct. So I just thought that was interesting. You know, I guess that's one approach. And again, all approaches can be defended and justified. It just didn't seem very in the spirit of what we in the software quality industry, specifically in life sciences, define it as to be.
Correct. If it's a critical system and you are relying on a system like this, then you know, it's as a customer, you are in a difficult physician. Yeah. How advance of a notice, we all do health checks, right? In every, we also have health check test bed. But the question comes in what value it is providing you, right? If you have to just check and see if the system is up and running, right? Yeah. So yeah, these are some of the considerations and accommodations you have to make when selecting a system, when maintaining that system, when some of the risk could not be mitigated, how to handle it procedurally. All those just come together, mm-hmm. and then you can come up with your testing strategy.
So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about CSA, because how do you think the CSA model is going to impact what you've kind of laid out today? I mean, many of what you do today is very risk-based, right? It's all standard, kind of Hart and GAMP 5, which is I don't see any different than what the CSA model. What is your take on the CSA model?
So I will put a disclaimer out. I'm not an expert on CSA. I read industry articles, and I think it has a long way to go. The intent is good. It's simplifying things, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like taking off some of the documentation burden our industry is marked with, right? Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I think it's a good step forward, but we cannot dilute the quality of testing, the rigor of testing in the name of CSA. That's mm-hmm. that's very, very right. important. The fundamentals were there for many long years, and they will be there in years ahead. Mm-hmm. I think organizations who are actively looking into CSAs, the CSA model, I think have to, it's not just, I would not call it a fad, but I would say, they have to basically make some serious consideration before, or adjustments before they can fit in that model in their organization. That will be my take on it.
Yeah. So, but you currently today also already do a lot of CSA like things, right? So you already incorporate informal testing versus formal testing,
sure.
right?
Sure.
I mean, there you do ad hoc testing, right? Like, so sure. there's a lot of concepts in your overarching testing framework that you've already laid out for your team that incorporate a lot of those things, right? When I look at it side by side, actually, you're not far off, and you guys also look at your systems and you categorize your systems, and taking it to the level that you're taking it with your risk-based requirements actually drives, I think, a story very close to the ideal, right? If you do the risk-based requirement assessment, you're going to get a much, much more fundamental, streamlined testing approach because you've done that upfront work, right?
Correct. I agree. And that's why I'm saying everyone has to go through that model. Everyone has to assess whether it fits their needs. And mm-hmm. And that's the only way to, because it's so new. It's so new, and not many people have looked into it wholeheartedly. But if you are interested in this implementing this CSA model, I think, as you said, it's not too far, but you have to make that you have to fill in that gap.
Yeah.
What that would be.
So you guys have a unique, you have your test automation strategy, which is not the standard out there. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, we have a governing PRCD of procedure to how we do things, that's what we train our resources on. And under that, we have work instructions, basically, for the technology platform or the test tool you utilize. They are governed under that procedures. Whenever a application or a system come for assessment, we give a good thought, which based on how the application is built, what technology platform it is built on or language, and then we do this assessment on what tool would be fit from there. Then we basically engage our system owners and our functional testers to assess which use cases would be, from a priority standpoint, needs to be automated first. And then it goes from there. We try to avoid systems which have a high frequency rate of change, basically, because, mm-hmm. The rework is just huge. But I'm for automation. Being a service organization, funding for automated projects or automation efforts sometimes get trickier because you have to show the direct benefit to the system owners or the function leads, because you can say how much time saving is there, how much resource saving is there, but if you are consuming that saving in rework, in updating whether it's framework or functional changes, then that is completely washed out. So you have to be very, very careful for that. And you cannot 100% automation. I think that's a false, criteria sometimes to go 100%. You cannot go 100% automation from day one, or for the newer application. You have to stay behind your manual testers and then assess and bring that application or system for automation.
One of the things that, as you grow your testing platform, how do you, like, one of the things that I value, you come to the table with this, Dory, this is my 3 to 5 year plan, right? And not every organization does that, right? And sometimes it's because it's a moving target or for whatever variety of the reasons. But you have this vision, your 3 to 5 year plan of what you want to do and how you want to get there. And so we can mark out, that transition. And as you grow, like, what are some of the things that you might want to start incorporating?
So if I understood your question correctly, I think what we do for a living in software quality and project management and the world of compliance, I think it's inherently a long process. It's not something short. It takes years to build the maturity, and many times with pressure from top management or pressure from to market the product or bring in the system online, we cut short on that. Right. And we have seen time and again that we pay dearly for that later on. Right. Any system, procedure, process, framework you try to implement, make sure that you have a plan for scalability. Right. Because what is there today will not be there tomorrow. Right. Or may change. In my opinion, that's how we do our roadmap planning for any tools or system, right? What is there today? What will be the interim state and how we want to get there? And then when you do 3 to 5 year planning, you may not be there with the org 5 years from now if you're highly mobile and things like that. But there will be people who will be using this system after that. Right. So write any procedure. My recommendation, write any procedure, work instruction or planning or architecture, in a way that you can scale up and make adjustments with your timeline.
Mm-hmm. So along those lines, given like application life span is 3 to 5 years, right? Depending on which ones you're talking about. So part of your roadmap, you plan for upgrades, you solicit information from other teams about new technology, yes. I'm guessing. How does that look? Do you guys do that as a team or is it kind of just like on a one-off?
So we sit in our architectural review board. TCOE has always have a presence depending on which business unit is being represented or presented in that. And basically we ask a question. Our gate approach also consider for some of the artifacts. Our governing PRCD on the lifecycle management also asks for some of the the testing artifacts, which needs to be fulfilled only by TCOE. So many times, yeah, I think it's 50-50. Many times the engagement is, you know, is well understood, the testing engagement. Many times, you know, we have to force upon or we have to approach the system owners to say that, hey, how about how it will be tested, how it will be rolled out and things like that. Mm-hmm. So whatever your way of doing things are, or in your, if they are mandated by your procedures that have to be there, then I think it's good. It makes it brings you a seat on the table. But if it's not, then I think it's time for you to bake in into your gate. Unless it's in your gate approach, you are important enough. I mean, testing is important enough to be part of that gate approach for your system and software. I think people would like to bypass you, mm-hmm. or to like to take shortcut on you.
Yeah. Switching gears here a little bit, I was wondering if we could talk about data integrity for a minute. Sure. You know, I don't know, maybe 2018-ish, right? We had a data integrity kind of movement within our niche CSV world, right? Have you seen adoption of you know, true data integrity principles at your organization? Have you had or seen the need for true data mapping in terms of like understanding the data and intended use of data that's coming in and out of systems? Have you gotten up to that sort of level?
So I have personally read a lot of articles and attended webinars, and I think our quality partners in my current org, does a very fine job in adherence to that. Wherever we are off, they will warn us that, you know, and question us, anytime we are implementing a system on that side. But it's a work in progress. I could not say that we have achieved 30%, 50%, 100%, mm-hmm. right? The principles of data integrity is well known, well published. The implementation of it varies from org to org, basically. Mm-hmm. That's where I will leave it. And for us also, it's a work in progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a hard thing. I mean, I know getting folks to agree upon intended use of a system is sometimes challenging in and of itself. And then to narrow down those user requirements to the specific ones that Correct. Are based on regulation versus based on a business need. Right, business. A true business yes. need versus right. a regulation, and there's a lot of controversy over what should or shouldn't be in those buckets, and how do you treat those subsequently? All right, so this last it's almost 2 years now, right, since COVID. So you've seen impact of COVID in terms of your organization really wanting to get online, right? You guys were working from home for a long time. You're still home.
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
Or yes. And I'm glad to say that in my org, current org, we didn't see a glitch in delivery of our system. My entire team in TCOE is remote. Before even COVID, all of our MSP partners were also on desktop as a service, mm-hmm. We were on ALM, so nothing on the testing side was impacted. Mm-hmm. Right, the delivery went on, and that model has matured in the last 2 years. So frankly speaking, right, people are much more comfortable, and even my own platform, I upgraded through in the COVID time last year. We went live last year. So I think the ground conditions are shifting, changing on a daily basis. We don't know what will be the final outcome, but if your org or your team is prepared mentally and is supported with the tools to go full digital, I think it's possible. I think it is much more efficient than being in person at your office.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Although I enjoy coming to Boston to see you, but, you know, so I do miss the human interaction, but I agree. I think we have as an industry have been extremely successful in overcoming the odds here and figuring out ways to work together collaboratively, getting on working sessions and everyone on calls. It's a challenge, but at the same time, definitely doable. Yeah. Are there things that you want to leave our audience with, things that you want them to think about, challenges that they, to overcome, or any just helpful nuggets of information?
I think collaboration, before my arrival here, my approach to any system implementation is, or support as a from the TCO is be honest about your intention, right? Collaborate early, and I think in last decade or so, I think these things have popped up a lot, talked about a lot, implemented a lot. But again, there is a lot of work to be need. I think human to human, apart from all the tools and resources available to us, human-to-human conversation and touch is important. And when you're honest about your approach and openly share your challenges, I think when two minds work together, they can find a solution. So it worked for me, no matter what technology I was or system or application I was dealing with. And from as a testing professional, what I would say is that so many different frameworks came, so many different processes came, mm-hmm. but the fundamentals have not changed. Mm-hmm. You want to have a good bug-free product out for your customer. That's mm-hmm. the bottom line. Mm-hmm. How you get to that is sometimes gets point of contention mm-hmm. for different reasons, but the goal should, be the most important for you as a professional of that body of knowledge, and you should stick to it. You should not dilute your faith in the principles of software quality.
Yeah, and I really applaud you at your transparency with your quality group. You often just lay it all out there, right? You come with solutions. You don't just come to problems to your quality group. You come with solutions to them, and you've earned their respect in that conversation by doing so. And so having those harder conversations are easier because you've sure. been transparent. You've been right. upfront. You've been the educator in the room, right? You've been the bridge in the room between the technology and the quality right. side. And you really put yourself in a position of empowerment in those rooms. And so I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Ajay. Well, it is August. It is hot here in Washington, D.C. It is quite humid. I suspect it might be the same down in North Carolina.
Yes.
So I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. And thanks for sharing your thoughts with our listeners.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to Software Quality Today with Dora Gonzalez-Azevedo. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, tx3services.com, to your friends and colleagues. And please feel free to leave us a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. Also, be sure to check out our archive section on our website for previous episodes. You can also check us out on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter at tx3services. This has been a TX3 Services production. Join us next time for another edition of Software Quality Today.